Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B.
Today's guest is Justin Carter, 12 years of career experience, second generation firefighter. Firefighter for Anderson City Fire Department in South Carolina and creator of Carter Mentality Podcast. Justin doesn't have an elaborate story to why he became a firefighter. It was simple, because of his dad and family history of being in emergency services. Once he was of age and able, he hit the ground running, obtaining all his certifications to get on the job. Once in, he finally realized there were things he had to change about himself and those around him to affect positive change. Having mentors or individuals within your life that are able to let you know when you're not on the right track are crucial. We can't win or do things alone in life. It takes a team and relationships to get us where we need to be. Justin realized this and is doing all he can to leave the service better than he found it. With that, I present Justin Carter.
All right, what's up, everybody? My name is Justin Carter. So I've been a fireman for about 12 years now. Just crested over about 12th year this past month. Upstate South Carolina is where I work for a fire only department. So I got into the fire service about 2-3 months, maybe 4 at max after high school. My father just crested over his 32nd year on the job. And growing up, it was always going to be either something in the military or it was going to be the fire service. And when I graduated high school, I pretty much told him that while I was in high school, I pretty much had made the decision that this is what I wanted to do for a living. And so kind of didn't have the framework as an athlete to really have the extra time to get involved in a fire, in a volunteer service or something like that. So I was constantly tied up with athletics. So after high school, I went down and told my dad, like, hey, I want to get this ball rolling. What should I do first? Should I just go get my EMT or should I try and get on as a volunteer somewhere? Should I try and get hired, whatever it may be? And I ended up getting on as a volunteer somewhere in the Low Countries, where I'm originally from, Myrtle Beach area. So right outside of Pawleys Island is where I ended up getting picked up with. And it's a department called Midway Fire. And they sponsored me to go to the fire academy. So I went right from there, like right out of high school, straight to the fire academy. And at 18 years old, went through the entire fire academy. And then after that, pretty much just launched off my career. I was in the fire academy from about 2014 until the middle to latter half of 2015. So it was just short of almost a year and some change. But after that, pretty much just launched off into my career and took off from there. So not your super flashy story, but not the textbook, this is what I'm going to try and sell you story. Remember we talked about that on my podcast, Danny, about yeah. How I don't have some massive elaborate story. So nothing crazy.
Okay. So obviously you are a second generation fireman.
So actually a funny story is, even though I'm second generation, so my mom actually did 10 years on the job also, but yes, it's second generation, but basically come from an entire family line of it, on my side. And then my dad's side, his mom's brother is a fire chief in a small town in West Virginia.
Okay. All right. So with obviously with it running in the family bloodline, you knew that's what you wanted to be. So when you figured out, hey, I'm going all in, did you apply to as many and all fire departments, or was there one in particular that you wanted to go to?
So that's funny, man. I actually just kind of, I was just shooting around. I was a really young, dumb 18-year-old kid, man. Like, I thought I had the world figured out. Thought I knew it all because my dad was in the fire service and I got connected early on with some amazing dudes that have become massive mentors and friends of mine. So I didn't really know if I wanted to leave Myrtle Beach, if I wanted to stay in my town the rest of my life, or if I wanted to spread my wings and bounce the house at 18, right? So me and my brother had talked about wanting to move out, and, you know, kind of, it's funny. I tell the story, like we were trying to pretty much just build around what he wanted to do. And then I knew that I was going in to try and find a pay department. So I went all down from all the way up to Charleston, all the way back. But my dad at the time worked for a department called Georgetown County Fire and EMS. He had probably been there at that time, probably 7, 8 years. He's now, I think he just hit 17 or 18 years there. Those numbers could be skewed. So dad, if you're listening, I apologize. I ended up getting picked up by them as a young 18-year-old kid, man. And I'm forever grateful for that because it is they're about 876 square miles of just rural and metropolitan coverage area, right? We went to a lot of fires. We cut a lot of cars, but you got so much experience because you were either by yourself on an engine company or you had, if you were lucky, a two-man engine company, right? So you learned really quickly, man, how to be a fireman and really how to mitigate some situations and some moments that required you to have to make decisions. And I was forever grateful for that. So I spent a collective total of about 8 years there. And then I took a job with a place for about a year, and it just wasn't for me. And so then I eventually found where I'm at now and forever grateful.
Okay. Obviously, you've mentioned mentors and how, you know, with your dad being in the fire service as well, you were fortunate to have all these individuals that you could kind of pick their brain and they can share information with you. So for individuals that are either new coming into the fire service or already there, but looking to find that individual or individuals that they can seek information from, how important is mentorship to you?
It's very big. I sometimes make the joke that I beat the horse of mentorship beyond past death, because I think it's so undervalued. Because if you look at the job, right, you have some studs and then you have guys who are just middle of the pack. And then you got guys who are just really checked out. Right. And I always say, and we've all been victim to this, so I'm not preaching anybody. When we see the guy who's not really into it, not motivated, and almost seems like he's there for the paycheck, what do? We kind of just blow him off, shrug him off. Right. But I've always asked myself as I got older and more mature in the job and more mature in life as an adult and everything that, if we never received the mentorship that I received as not only a fireman, but what I had as an example for my father and the guys that he had around him that I also got to learn from, right? If I never had those examples and those mentors in my life, how would I have turned out? And it's not that these people are not bad people. Maybe they just never been mentored by somebody who is ate up about the job. Now, on the caveat side of that, there also are people that just have that full susceptibility to being able to get all the mentorship that they want, and they're just closed off to it, right? There's those people that are in this job. But I think mentorship is massive because you have if you have the ability, you have the responsibility, is how I see it, to spread the knowledge, because we are not only a very young fire service, but we also have a level of inexperience that follows youth. Right. And so with that, we have to be able to teach these guys and help them understand and mentor them. Like, look, man, for me, when I came on the job, dude, the back half of like 2015. So really actually middle 2015, all the way to really, honestly speaking, probably about 2019 to 2020. Dude, those are some awesome years for me. Like in my head, I didn't know any different and we were going to fire. So I was like, I'm fortunate. I'm blessed, right? Like I can't understand how this isn't across the board. Well, it is across the board. You know, there's people and there's departments in the world that don't catch the amount of work that you do, right? And then people leave those places to reach out to go to a busier, better, more heavy fire duty organization. Well, they need that mentorship. They need that development. They need those examples of like, hey, you know, from the experience that I've gained, this is how it's helped me. And so on and so forth. You know, I don't want to be very long-winded with that answer, but I think it's just very paramount, because if we don't really invest, and I use a lot of the example of the younger generation, because that's what we're faced with right now, right? That is the circumference of the fire service, essentially, is youth and inexperience. Well, I think we, as you know, that 12 to 17 and then upwards to those 24, 25 year guys that kind of might be on their way out the door, but are still willing to devote as much time as they can while they're still on the floor. Like, I think we should be mentoring these young guys as best as possible, because I always tell my mentors, and I tell any, you know, rookie fireman that I talk to, man, like, if it wasn't for the guys that poured into me, I probably would have just turned out to be one of those go with the flow firemen. I wouldn't have known any different, and would have never have been able to decipher, you know, what it means to be into the job, what it means to be passionate about the job, what it means to share the job. And, you know, I went through a lot of hard roads, man. Like, I went through a lot of hard roads as a young kid, that treated my career very selfishly, because I had some selfish ambition towards, you know, how I wanted the job. I wanted to get what I needed out of the job. I was very hesitant. Not, I shouldn't say it like that. I was very, I went about it the wrong way of giving back to the job. And it took me a while to realize that I had to have some really hard gut checks with myself, and then other people, you know, that value me and love me and respect me, sat down and were like, hey man, you're saying the right things. The delivery is rough. You're going about it and it's closing it off. And I was just like, you know, I'm not really doing my part. I'm not doing that part of that mentorship, because I was raised in the era of the fire service where it was like, hey, you know, two ears, one mouth kind of thing, right? And I've had to teach myself, like, with this younger generation, is they love to ask questions. And I was always the person that asked questions, because I wanted to know why. Not why because I was questioning what they did. I wanted to know why, because I'm like, hey, I've done it this way, and if you like it done this way, I'm totally for it. Explain to me why, so I can figure out how to blend in that middle road. That way I can check your guys' box, check my box, and know it's getting done properly. And there's no fault in the operation. There's no downfall in the success and the fluidity of what we're trying to achieve.
Okay. With that being said, can you tell us a little bit about your organization, the size, how many stations, amount of personnel, things of that nature? It doesn't have to be like exact numbers.
Yeah, for sure. So right now we're a three-station department. We run three frontline engine companies, a ladder company, a rescue, and a battalion. We are currently in a major upswing of development. Not only is our area growing daily by the second, we've got a lot of homes coming in, a lot of development coming into the city and into the area, and we're growing a lot. We're growing a lot. With that being said, I don't want to quote mileage wise, because relatively speaking right now, I don't remember exactly what it is. We're in the stages of getting ready to start the architectural and building process over the next year or so for another station that'll give us four stations, and it'll probably open up for another engine and another potential Quint company. We have a new heavy rescue on order on the way. So just a lot of phenomenal things, you know, staffing wise. I think it's 20, everybody forgive me, I want to say 22. And so we carry, I think it's like 19 or 20 on shift. So the way our schedule is, we get a lot of comp time to burn. So we normally have about six guys off a shift. And with that, still gives us about four across the board on every rig. And then the rescue carries two right now. So yeah, man, like, staffing is not a downfall problem in our department. And that was a massive, massive change for me, man. Because like I said, for the bulk of my career, I spent in a rural metropolitan area. You know, I started my career in a city, went as a volunteer, and then got hired in that rural metropolitan dynamic, spent a bulk of my career there, and then decided, hey, I'm ready to finish out my career as a city fireman, right? And when I got there, some of my growing pains, and I'm very open to talk about this, some of my growing pains is because I was used to doing so much by myself and hadn't had staffing in a inevitably a long time, that a couple fires were like rough to, I felt like I failed on a couple fires because I was just like, oh crap, I'm so used to defaulting to my normal. And so as I've grown, I've been at my organization for about 2 years now. Yeah, 2 years. And some amazing guys there, some amazing friends of mine, great leadership that we have. We're in a very, like I said, very massive growth period. But I will say this is, on the outside looking in, I think everybody can see what we're building. And I'm very blessed to have what we have, but I can't imagine what we're going to look like in 5 to 7 years. And I think it's going to look good. I'm also a very realistic person. With that 5 to 7 years of growth, obviously comes the hardships, right? Everybody goes through their funks. Everybody goes through their low points, their low moments of just like, I can't understand the direction that we're going. I can't figure out why we're going this direction. And I've been there, and I've been there. And I think one of the beautiful things is that when you have those hard conversations with yourself and you really sit back and you look at it and you're just like, everything we have is because we are willing to step up where we need to step up at, right? So one of the things me and you talked about, Danny, if you remember on my podcast when you were with me, is we talked about how that political position of a fire chief is, and man, I want to be real with you when I say this real quick. Like you that conversation that me and you have really inspired me a lot to kind of look at from a 30,000 foot view and back up all the way to like 100,000 foot view, right? And you definitely brought a lot of solid points to the table that I thought about afterwards. And since then, man, I will say, and I'll give you some credit for that too, is that a lot of happiness has came because I kind of took a lot off my shoulders. I felt like I want to say this properly, but not sound stupid when I say this. I felt like there was a lot of personal responsibility that I kept putting on my shoulders. And I think we as firemen are guilty of putting a lot of personal responsibility on our shoulders and trying to control a lot of what we can't control, right?
Right.
A lot of guys want overnight change. A lot of guys want 5 to 7 week change. And the one thing that I have quickly learned about our fire chief and actually, gained a lot of respect is the guy is very good at playing the long game. He's setting us up for a longevity success because if you do instant success, then you only get instant morale change. And that was something I kind of told myself is like, hey, I think this guy's playing the long game. And that's pretty cool because he's trying to sustainably maintain morale, not just give you, bam, here's this quick fix, give you a morale boost. And then, you go another 8 to 7, 8 to 10 months before you have another bam, quick morale fix. And so it's definitely worth riding the cusp of. It's riding the wave, as I call it, right? It's definitely worth riding the wave. So yeah, all that to long-winded answer to say, like, man, we are on some massive upticks for our area. We're very competitive with another large department in our area pay-wise. So we're very fortunate and blessed with that. And ultimately go in a direction where I think we'll probably be in the wheelhouse of between the two sides of it that I-85 splits us, man. I think we're going in a direction where we're gonna be tactically different than them because we do run more fires than them. And we breed a very aggressive culture in my department, and I'm extremely thankful for that. Aggressive search culture, aggressive truck culture, Angie culture, all of it. Every bit across the board is an aggressive culture because we have some jam up aggressive dudes in our fire department. Guys that are very much into the job, guys who are willing to roll with the punches and say like, hey, let's do this for the right reason.
Okay. Now, has the department always been aggressive when it comes to search and fire round tactics? Because here lately, I think with all the data and the information and
individuals cannot refute data, and you're seeing more and more departments starting to go, okay, like we need to change the way we search. We need to actually conduct it in a timely manner, not put it off as the last minute, like a checkbox thing. So has your department always been that way, or is that something that's recently happened?
So, for the longevity of the department, when I came up to the upstate about 6 years ago, I learned about this department and who they were. And I'll go ahead and just give a shout out. I work for the Anderson City Fire Department. I think it's, I didn't want to be, I think I felt like I was starting to be a little bit too cryptic. So the Anderson City Fire Department's where I work, upstate South Carolina. Very well known across the state. Search culture was something that was always prioritized along with engine work. But the ventilation culture is probably within the last, I'd say, 2 to 4, maybe 5 years. Because for the longest time, I always heard about how aggressive the Anderson City Fire Department was, line through the door, old school tactics, line through the door, fan followed, guys are going to find the fire, they're kicking it in the teeth, and that's how we're doing it, And the truck company was, for two things. They rolled the fires to search, or they rolled wrecks with entrapment, and they were cutting cars when they happened in the city. But I think some awesome guys got into the mix of the pool and said that, hey, we want to start developing a true truck culture. And true truck culture goes across the board of search, ventilation, special operations side of things, all the way dynamically of how they wanted to build this truck culture. And with that, it inspired also building an aggressive engine culture. We have some really good guys in our department, that are very much engine smart guys, is what I call them. Myself, I default myself to being a engine culturist because that's where I spent a large majority of my career. But I also had a very huge blessing of being in my previous department that I spent a bulk of my time with, Georgetown County, like I previously stated. I wrote a squad company, so I handled a lot of special operations stuff and rose to, through the ranks to senior fireman, and was, assigned to a rescue engine and got to really operate a lot on the special operations side. So special operations side, and when I say the special operations side, I always joke, I suck at ropes. But I love to search. I love cutting cars, airbag stuff. But no one's gonna sit here, and I love saying this because it's so true. No one's gonna argue that there's nothing better than running the pipe on a good fire. Right. But across the board, so the department created, just you can see that there's a lot of culture that's split across the board. There's guys that are very ate up with the engine company, and they're not ashamed to tell you. Like, and it's a fun little feud battle that the truck has with the engine companies, is because the guys that are ate up with the truck company, they're passionate about truck work, and they're gonna let you know. And then the guys that are passionate about engine work, they're gonna let you know they're passionate about engine work. So it's fun, it's awesome, man. But yeah, their development, you can definitely tell. In the 2 years that I've been there, I can speak 100% on those 2 years, that it is very much a constant improvement daily. There's guys that come back with data, like you talked about how can we be more efficient on searching, because we're seeing these studies happen, and we want to be ahead of the game. And then there's a lot of stuff of tactic wise that guys are very passionate about taking classes and traveling around and getting as much knowledge as they can from credible, experienced instructors. And they come back and they say, like, hey, man, we saw this at a truck company class. We saw these guys, and we think for our area and dynamic of what we're faced within the city, I think this could be a good thing that we implement. And we start the process of trying to figure out where to go. And I say we because we're all part of the department, right? It's a constant development, and really on the outside looking in, man, you can see that there's some very passionate dudes within the department, and guys that want nothing but the best for what we have. And you can see that our administration is not scared to flat out just tell us that, how thankful they are. And I always say this, man, like, this just goes back to about the development and culture of the department. we look for quick fixes, and that's bad, and that's a shameful thing on us, right? But sometimes a thank you goes a long way, a lot further than most people realize how much a thank you goes. And our administration is not scared to say thank you. Our administration is not scared to give credit where credit's due. And that was big for me. That was big. On the latter half out the door, when I left my previous department, we finally got a fire chief in that wasn't scared to give credit where credit was due. So that was a newer thing in my career, really, because I kind of worked for some chiefs that were just, hey, I'm the fire chief, and that's what I am. And it served its purpose and it served its place, but it always kind of sucked because it was like, am I just a number or am I a person that you know? And definitely, I will give our administration, from our battalions all the way up to our fire chief, front level officers too, line officers. They're not scared to say thank you. They're not scared to give credit where credit's due. But specifically, our officers, they're also not scared to hold you to a level of accountability if they see that inspiration and that drive in you, and they see that you have what it takes. They're going to put you to that test. They're going to put you to that level. And that's most important, because again, that's developing the culture that you want to see. It's almost like a quote of being the change that you want to see, right? And so that's a lot of what that we're trying to continuously implement where we are. And I'm just very thankful, and it's very fun to be a part of.
And as far as department operations, if a first due structural box comes in, what's Anderson's first alarm assignment consist of?
So our first due box is going to be three engine companies, a rescue, the ladder, and a battalion. So we're pretty much jumping the city, right? That could potentially change once we get our station four built. Who knows? Who knows? I don't know. We've even talked about two is like, there's plans for probably a station five. And so the dynamics could really change when that happens. But as of right now, it's three engine companies, a ladder, a rescue, and a battalion. And if it's during normal business hours of 8 to 5, you'll get a chief officer. And oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to bring it in. It's because it's new. We do have a safety officer now too. So a box is the battalion safety, three engines, a ladder, and a rescue. And that safety officer is the senior captain of the shift. So.
Any automatic aid, or is that something you have to call for if needed?
We call for it if needed. So our commercial assignments, so the way that Anderson is the city fire department is a paid department, and then surrounding around us is Anderson County Volunteer Service, which is a very large county organization of volunteer firemen. I don't want to go too in depth because honestly, I've only been there 2 years. I don't know much about them. I really don't know much about them. There's some guys within our department that are in the volunteer organization, but so if we get a commercial assignment that requires basically a quote unquote second alarm assignment, we will call for individual. We'll call for communications to dispatch that aid, but nothing automatic. Our rescue company is a split company, which is it's primarily responsible for coverage of the city, but also disperses across the county as a technical support company. So any call that comes in for a hazmat or technical response, the rescue automatically gets assigned to that call.
And what's your rank structure like?
So you come in the door as a fireman, and then after that is promotion to engineer. And then from that, it's lieutenant to captain to battalion, and so on and so forth, all the way up to fire chief. You'll go to assistant chief, then to fire chief is our rank structure. So,
Are you allowed to skip rank?
no, and that's one thing that I truly do like a lot about our department is that you have to spend a minimum of 3 years as a fireman to be eligible to test for an engineer position. And then once you get that engineer position, you have to be at that engineer position for at least 3 years to be eligible to test for an officer spot. And then after that, I believe after you make lieutenant, you can go to captain within a year. But I know me personally speaking, I've never heard of anybody going straight from like lieutenant right over to captain.
Okay.
The one thing that is very just talking about, rank structure, the one thing that always attracted me so much to the Anderson Fire Department was, dude, for the longest time, that place, like someone had to die to get in there. They had a whole testing process, but all the guys, even when I got hired 2 years ago, man, like there's like our captain's got 23 years on, a lieutenant has 21 years or 22, something like that. Our battalion has, I think, 25, I think, or is getting ready to hit 25. So there's longevity in the department, right? There's not, young, there's young guys, but there's not young officers. Right. I think our lowest engineer has at least 6 years on. So there is quote unquote longevity, but especially at the company officer level, lieutenant and above, there is tenure, there's time, there's experience, and that's something that me personally, just as the nerd I am, has always valued about when it comes to the traditional, excuse me, the traditional side of the fire service, right? And that was something that I always valued about my organization, especially to now. Now, as those guys phase out, what happens? The youth comes in the door, right? But it's kind of funny because I always talk about it. Like we at the 12 to really that 12 to 17 year spot are essentially those middle of the pack guys right now that are going to probably start funneling up that ladder to take those spots as those guys retire and people get promoted and different stuff like that, right? So while sometimes it could be hard to see because of really how youthful not only society is, but just the fire service is, really, if you boil it down, man, really nothing's kind of changed on that aspect of just longevity, continuously replacing inexperience, replacing spots. Experience looks different these days, right? Because 25 years ago, people were going to fires left and right, and you can have a 12-year guy that has 50, 60 fires under his belt, but is very knowledgeable and very smart. And I think that we shouldn't discredit that. Or you could have, a 9-year guy that is just extremely intelligent and is able to work his way around things and figure things out and solve problems. And, he makes a good company officer because at the end of the day, as a company officer, you're a problem solver, right?
Right.
So dynamics across the board are there. And that I think that's one of the things that makes us great, honestly.
Okay. All right. In your personal opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you when it comes to firefighting?
So I love talking about this. Whenever we were talking about topics, this is something I really wanted to cover. So when you talk about aggressive, I think that term's been overused in probably the last 3 years, and I'll explain why. I'll go down a little bit of a rabbit hole with it. If we throw it back to the 80s, man, those guys, they were just dogs, right? When the Bronx was burning, when the early points of the FDNY, of like when everybody was in like the what I call the marriage stages of the FDNY, because if you look at all the videos that come out now, it's like the 80s, the 90s, and the early 2000s, right? And it was no different. They went through the front door and they got after it. And so the reason I think aggressive firemanship, essentially, has become a coined phrase is because the two sides of what the fire services became, it's inevitably became more of a safety driven job and technology. Now, to say that, I think there's been good technology that has came for the fire service. I really do. Like, I do think there's some good technology, but I think that you have to decipher and find where that technology best suits and best fits. But also, I think that sometimes we do get a little ahead of ourselves and get in our own way with the safety culture. Like we inherently have a dangerous job, right? We have a very dangerous job. We are the frontline defense to someone's worst day, no matter what. When someone picks up the phone and calls 911, they don't know your training level. They don't know if you're into the job. They don't know if you hate the job. They don't know if you've pulled people out of burning buildings, if you never pulled people out of burning buildings. Those people don't even know if you've ever been inside of a burning building. But I think we, as stewards of the job, should definitely maintain that level of not ever getting away from teaching what it means to be an aggressive fireman. And I think we do that by just continuing to teach not only the things that have never failed in the job, you know, the basics win the battles kind of thing, right? But also explaining that, yes, as things change, right? Construction's changed over time. The development of different kind of car styles, you know, we went from all metal frame cars to lithium ion battery cars to EV to predominantly plastic driven cars, right? You know, when you were jacking a dash back 15, 16 years ago, you had a metal dash bar that you were able to just eat the dash with. Now you have to really learn how to operate and maneuver your tool when you're lifting a dash. Same thing. You now have to be ahead of the game and think smarter than the fire when you're making that hallway, because now things burn quicker, they burn hotter, and you are inevitably in a more of a time crunch than you were 15, 16 years ago. But I think if we maintain that aggressive mindset and not be such a safety-driven culture of the fire service, like, we teach these guys, like, hey, this is what's in front of you. Figure out how to attack a game plan with that. And I lost my train of thought for a second. I'm sorry. So basically what I was saying is that if we continue to just keep, like, hey, this is what's in front of you, and we study and we learn and we develop that of what's around us, you know, your area dynamic of what you're facing. You know, the station I'm currently assigned to, man, is a large commercial area with a lot of old school ranch homes, you know, shotgun style ranch homes. And those were built, you know, in the early 60s all the way to probably the late 80s, early 90s, right? And so even in the 90s, you still had some solid lumber that was coming out. So these things are going to burn a lot differently than, you know, the back half of that response area, which is new commercial construction of an apartment and different stuff like that, fast fabricated framing, that is going to burn hotter, quicker, and faster, right? So I think when it comes to using the word aggressive, I don't think we should just beat that horse down about, like, we need to develop aggressive firemen. We need to develop aggressive firemen. Our job is to be aggressive. Our job is to prioritize the citizens. I always say the quote that human beings find a shit way to survive in a shit situation. And you should always remember that. Like, if there's tenable space, search it. If there's an ability to be able to knock a bulk of the fire down very quickly and then get ahead of that hose line and start searching, you have a responsibility to do that, in my personal opinion, also. Because they expect nothing but professionalism out the door. Your community doesn't realize what's serving them. It's a true fact. There's a large area of the American Fire Service that has their community, or excuse me, that their community has no idea what quality is coming to them. And I'm not saying that there's people don't have quality or not, but what I'm saying is that if you're able to go into these people's homes and show up to these people's homes with them already on a blank slate, why don't you write the right slate? Okay. And I think if you're gonna say, like, hey, we have a for them culture, we have a civilian first mindset, then you have to carry that. You really have to carry that. And it carries a lot of weight too, man. Like, that's fighting for the right things. That's fighting for the things that are going to be the hardest. And that's having conversations with leaders and officers and your administration that might make a lot of people uncomfortable, but say, like, hey, you know, if this is where we are and this is what we want to do, this is what carries the weight of doing that. And I think that the fire services, just as a whole, I'm not speaking directly about my organization, but I think the fire service as a whole, we've kind of gotten away with that, man. Like, I really do. I feel like we've gotten away from it. There's still a lot of places out there that do carry that aggressive mindset, and I'm very blessed to say that our organization carries a very aggressive mindset. 2 weeks ago, we removed a lady from a burning building, and it was a small house, right? Pipe man went right through the front door, and she was right in front of him. But at the end of the day, it was quick from time to park break to removal of the victim. I think it was under 2 minutes, right? That's fast. That's very fast. And so I think if you do that and you maintain that culture and you're maintaining that mindset, you have to supplement the not only the training but the vision and the culture. I continue to use the word culture because it's important. But I want to say this is culture is what you make it. So if you want to be an aggressive organization, put the guys in the right positions to be able to teach aggression, but teach it calculated aggression. That's where I come into when you ask me about what aggressive means. There's calculated aggression. Everybody loves to go down that hallway. Everybody loves to get the pipe and get the work, and everybody wants to make the search, and everybody wants to pop a top on the roof and whatever, right? But inevitably, there's just some fires that we can't really make a difference on, and it sucks. It sucks. There's a lot of hard pills that sometimes you have to swallow in this job. But if there's just that 0.2% chance that you can do something different than just immediately throwing your hands up and saying, guys, this is a defensive operation. Run that 0.2% as far as you can into the ground before you really have to raise your flag and say, like, all right, dude, unfortunately, this is a surround and drown. This is, to me, that's what being aggressive is being calculated, but never really compromising your values, and also maintaining the vision of like, hey, if you want to be for them, you're always for them through everything. You can't really be for them if you're not wanting to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go pick grandma up off the ground, right? And you also can't say I'm for them if you're just not prioritizing those high things of, search, water on the fire, ventilation if it's calling for it, and different stuff like that. Like, I just don't think you can really claim to be aggressive if those things aren't being prioritized across the board.
No, that's fact. And not to beat a dead horse, but I think you were spot on when you mentioned, like, there are, sadly and unfortunately, there are fire departments out there who the citizens think when an emergency occurs, like, the quality and the training level and the skill level of this department, of said department, will be top notch. Unfortunately, that is not the case. We all know the American Fire Service is predominantly volunteer, and I'm not taking a shot at volunteers because I started as a volunteer. I will forever be indebted to what the volunteer fire service got where I am today. But unfortunately, with times of individuals having to work, like, there are departments, volunteer departments, that aren't as aggressive and are very quick to use the term fully involved, and hey, if anyone's in there, it's over with. So yeah, no apologies needed, at least on my end, when you say that, because that's a fact. Like, we all know of an organization wherever we live that's yeah, hopefully I'm home that day or something.
Well, and I think a lot of that we have to attribute to that. Again, I'm not going to throw shade at volunteers, but I do say a statement that I do 100% believe in is that it really, man, honestly, dude, I'm gonna kind of get a little fired up here, but it's just passion. Like, it doesn't take a lot to be into this job. It really doesn't. Like, if you really boil it down, it doesn't take a lot to be into this job. We're adrenaline junkies that love going to fires, right? While everyone's running away, the cliche saying of why everyone's running away, you're running out, as goofy as I think that is, but it's true, dude. Like, it's really true. We love going to fires. So it doesn't take a lot to be into this job. I also don't think it takes a lot to prioritize how good you want to be at this job. There's a difference between not knowing, and then there's a difference between knowing and just not caring. Like, right? You can't fault the guy for knowing what he doesn't know. If the guy doesn't know, you can't hold him back victim. But if the guy knows, like if you've got that 17-year volunteer that just pulls up and two rooms in a hallway are going in a house and he's got fire blowing out of two windows and he's just like, nope, this is a surround and drown. Like, come on, dude. You know better than that. Like, you know deep down in your heart, that's not what it is. And I think complacency happens, but I think this is where I talk about the negatives of what the safety culture's created. We've got stupid things that came out, and I say it all the time, like survivability profiling, right? And that's where I developed that quote of human beings find a shit way to survive in a shit situation, because we've got these scientists that respectfully have never been on the fire ground and have never Very many of them have never really been on the fire ground and know how it operates. They're just very good at calculating numbers and putting things together, right? It's just what it is. It's just the truth of the fact. Very seldomly do you have guys that are within organizations that have transitioned to become evidential-based investigators that have time on the fire service. But I have friends that have pulled people out of burning buildings in situations where, no, they didn't need to be in there, but they went in there and that person was pulled out and they gave them an opportunity. Whether they survived or not, the opportunity was given. And I think that's at the end of the day, is because when you're in a very difficult situation, your body kicks into that response fight or flight method. And that goes across the board. Like you might be back against the wall, have no ability to get out of that house. And you're praying that the fire department comes to get you, but like your body's not going to just, as soon as you get removed from the situation, be like, huh, let's give up. So it's the opportunity to let them give the chance to have another day. And, you know, when that comes into the survivability profiling side of things and of just all that, it really disgusts me, man, because I'm like, dude, what about the studies that were not getting published because it debunks that data, right? The studies that are being produced of the people that got pulled out of this four rooms in a hallway going, but the fireman made that back room and was able to pull them out and they're still walking today. Yeah. Is their skin burnt up? Absolutely. But I'm sure that they live with the fact that they have those scars because that fireman put their life in jeopardy, you know? And so it ties into both things about being aggressive, but ultimately like the quality of what you are. I think, and this is where I might catch some flack for saying this on your podcast. And if it does, just direct them directly towards me. But you have the ability to determine to be the kind of fireman you want to be. It wakes up with a choice. Every morning you wake up and you look in the mirror, right? You look in the mirror when you're brushing your teeth, you comb your hair and you look at yourself and you're like, okay, I don't look like a bag of ass today. Awesome. You can do the same thing about the job. You can look at yourself in the mirror and ask yourself, what kind of fireman am I? Or am I being the fireman that I need to be for my community, my civilians, the civilians I've served? And more importantly, my family. You know, one of the biggest things that was ever said about the fire service that is being shared all over the place now is, are you the fireman you want coming to your family? And I think if we ask that question a lot more often and a lot more on a serious level, I think there's a lot of people, you know, that are probably going to take some personal thought to that, right? And we all should. I think even the most aggressive fireman should take thought to that of like, how can I be 1% one second faster masking up? You know, how can I be 1 second quicker, put my stuff on to get out the door quicker? How can I be that much faster as a chauffeur to know, hey, if I cut this block and then I hang this left, that's going to actually drop me faster to where I need to be, right? And so sometimes having those really hard conversations with yourself and having those people around you, tying it all the way back full circle to the mentorship side of things, right? You know, one of my really good friends that's on shift with me, he's an engineer, man. He is me and him have some really in-depth conversations. Really, really in-depth conversations. And I don't know if sometimes he realizes he does it, but like when we hang up the phone, he'll leave me and I'm just like, and I'll chew on whatever he said for like 2 days. And I'll be like, damn, that was a really good point. Like that was a solid point. And I mean, he's a young dude. Like he's same age as me, but he's got younger time on the job. He's got like 7 years, 8 years on the job. But that I don't even look at that because it's just how well he's able to have these conversations, right? And the way that we're able to facilitate these hard growth conversations with both of us. You know, not as in like, I think you need to change this because this is a problem. But just like, hey, really, are we being as fast as we need to be? Or are we following that path and trail that we need to follow? Right. So yeah, I hope that tied in more off your point. I know it's kind of long-winded, but
No, you're good. You're good. Okay. When it comes to outside training, getting outside of the four walls of your organization, how you do things, what is your take on individuals that go to outside training to hopefully bring back some new innovations, spark that conversation within your organization?
so I'm going to be super real when I say this. If you asked me this question 5 years ago, I would have said there's no point. And I'm going to say that because I was in the honeymoon phase, right? I've came up around the shoulders of some amazing, very experienced mentors. One of my best friends has got, I think he's got 24. Yeah, he's getting ready to hit 24 years on the job and always has worked in some very low income stricken areas, right? So it inevitably has brought a lot of fire duty. And has taught me so much about the job. So I always kind of felt like, dude, I didn't, what was this other class going to teach me when I've got like this massive wealth of knowledge across the board from these guys, right? Then I started taking classes and then I started talking to guys and then I started really just picking different brains, different perspectives. And I was like, yeah, I mean, we all go about it the same way, but people have different deliveries of it, right? Like everyone knows how to force a door, but maybe this guy sets the tool on an outward swinging door a little bit differently than I set the tool. And that works for him. Let me try it. Oh, wow, that's actually pretty smooth. You know, do you necessarily have to adopt it and make it your Bible? No, but like there's another perspective to have. So asking me that question now, I'm 100% all for it. And I'm very vulnerable and honest about that because I got to start taking some classes for some awesome dudes. And I'm very forever thankful for it. Just probably 3.5 weeks ago, I took a class for a training track. And I was looking forward to it, but it was a lot of review, right? Like it's stuff that you already know how to do. There's a lieutenant there, and I want to give him a shout out. His name's Lieutenant Craig Williams with Simpsonville Fire Department in South Carolina, upstate South Carolina. One of his techniques when it comes to search is something I've 100% adopted. So, Craig, if you're listening to this, I just want you to know your legacy is being carried, brother, because I've definitely been showing it away. But just the simplicity of when it comes to removing a guy out of a window, right? Like the way he explained it, of just putting the head, that the chin to the chest, and how it rolls the shoulders forward. Just that little minor detail, bro. Like that minor detail, I was like, holy shit, I didn't think about that. Right. And so when you have the right guys in the right spots, and you have knowledgeable, experienced guys teaching classes, whether it be individual, like private company classes, or you're teaching, you know, the right instructors are inside of an academy class. It could be good. It can be solid, and there's a lot of value in it. And I'm very blessed that over probably the last 3, 4 years, man, like I've really just latched on to just how thankful I can those opportunities and those conferences are. I know you spoke a lot about conferences when you were on my podcast about how it really ignited your passion again, right? Because you were in that very low rut. And dude, it's true. It's true. Like I think sometimes when we're in those low ruts, signing up for a conference is what's good. You get around different faces, different mentalities, different perspectives, different mindsets, and you just get to absorb all that, and you can bring it back, and it can carry you through longevity. The trick of the trick of the trade is though, is keeping all that and knowing the time and place, knowing how to maintain that inspiration past, you know, 8 months after that conference, right? So yeah, I'm all for it. You know, one of my big things that I'm working on right now, not scared to talk about it, but and it's in its early stages, is I'm in the process of putting together my own company, to start going around and teaching and all that stuff. I love teaching. I've been fortunate enough to be an instructor in some different class settings, and also being able to be an instructor to new people coming in the door. It's not, but I think one of the biggest things too is just how you can inspire and how you can really just reignite someone's passion when they're at that low point of what that class can do, you know? So yeah, I can't say enough about how beneficial they can be, but they can also be detrimental, right? Because you never know. Sometimes you go and take this class and you think it looks cool on paper, but then you get there and it's taught by some yeehaw wahoo that don't really know what he's talking about. And you know, so it can, you know, I will say take classes, but I'll also say don't be scared to vet your class, right? I think you have the not only the responsibility, but the benefit as a fireman to be able to vet what experience and what knowledge you're getting, you know? And I think that comes with the opportunity of experience and longevity. You're able to kind of see through some of the tape if there's red tape. And that's important. But yeah, can't stress enough that how important they can be. And that's coming from somebody for the longest time that really didn't see the useful beneficialness of them.
Okay. All right. All right. When it comes to recruitment and retention, where do you see the fire service doing good at, and where do you think the fire service can improve on when it comes to that for respective organizations?
I think both sides. I think we as fire service can do better at not only recruitment but also retention. There's no secret that right now we are in a retention issue and also a recruitment issue, because you hear a lot of people say, well, there's not a lot of guys knocking down the door to be a fireman. And so with that, the question sparks is, okay, why aren't people knocking down the door to be a fireman? And I like to break it down is, so in the early 2000s, a lot of the massive influx of like your 25, 27 year guys that you're seeing now, were the guys that came after, 9/11, pre-9/11, that, just happened to maybe catch a clip of an FDNY video. And I'm like, dude, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. I'm going to be a fireman. And then after 9/11, a lot of guys felt the calling to go be a fireman because that was their way of giving back to the nation. Right. But through that brought a lot of guys that were willing to lock in because the fires were there. The call volume might not have been there, right? EMS wasn't that big of a thing back then because there was that separation, but the fires were there. Things were burning. And it kept guys around because they were like, why do I want to walk away from this job when I'm going to a fire a day or two fires a day or whatever it may be, right? Now it's not like that. Things, even though they burn faster, hotter, and quicker, don't burn as much for some reason, which is weird, because you would think the faster framing side of things of how quick the throwing up houses and, something always the joke I make is like, dude, it's crazy how fast they can throw a house together, but there's never the fire to follow it, which I'm not sitting here saying I want people's stuff to burn, okay? But it does spark the question of like, man, if you're able to throw a house up and 3 weeks, how is it not catching on fire? And 3 weeks after that, because it's like something's got to be wrong. But yeah, so the fire duty's not really there. It's and with that is a lot of now organizations are having to figure out a way to be able to supplement the lack of fire duty with what? Pay, right? Because if they want to keep people around, they are like, hey, we want to pay you for being here. Because everybody knows this, that when in the early 2000s, when you came in the job, dude, when I started the job, I started at $30,000. And right now I'm making more than I've ever made as a fireman before. And I'm forever blessed and thankful that the good Lord has put that in my ability to be able to collect that, to provide for my family and provide for my soon to be daughter, that is due in 2 months. But with that also comes with, I think that's where the cultural side of wanting to be here versus not wanting to be here really comes into play. So to continue on the recruitment side of things is that back in the day, they really didn't have to push for a lot of recruitment because guys knew that things were burning. Guys were willing to take that low pay to go be a fireman, right? I've heard so many stories about guys that are like, yeah, dude, I walked away from a third shift job at this plant and I was making this amount of money in 2001 to go be a fireman because I just felt led to do that. And I'm like, that's insane because in 2001 that was a lot of money you were making and then you took a massive pay cut. But they're happy, right? And so where we sit now is how do we recruit? Pay is a big thing. I think the youthfulness of this job is now that a lot of people, this is where I say that they're not as uneducated as we think they are. A lot of things are technologically based, right? A lot of kids are glued to their phones. A lot of people are consumed with social media these days, but they also, with that, can see so many ins and outs of what the world has. You have this plant job that's paying, $75,000 a year for you to come work a 3-night swing schedule, and Yeah, 12 hours, it sucks, dude. At from, 8 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock in the morning, that's the dead times, right? Or, 12 to 12, and it's brutal, but you're making 70 plus grand a year. And, when you get your 40 hours, then you go to time and a half, and then guys are like, so, they're capping out at about $120,000, $130,000 a year. And it's like, all right, that three shift swings 12 schedule is crappy, but it's well worth $130,000 a year because my kids don't ever have to think about where's their next thing coming from, right? Inherently, we are a blue collar job, but I always do believe, and I sometimes take flack for this, but I also have a lot of people that agree with me when I say this. I think if we are a blue collar job, if you look at a welder, he's a blue collar professional, right? Well, what do you pay a welder off of? You pay a welder off of his experience on the job, not how fast he can do the job. So why are we not paying firemen the same thing? Why are not more departments sitting here saying, when you come in the door, this is your base pay, but this is how we stack more things plus step raises, this, that, and the third. And a lot of it boils down to, man, like you said, a large majority of the fire services volunteer, but those paid departments, they're only given, like we all know, they're only given so much of a budget, right? Because of tax dollars that come in, the revenue from whatever the city may generate, and this, that, and the third. If you don't have a very populated, very well attracted city, inevitably there's not enough money there to be able to supplement what you'd realistically want to get paid. So I think the biggest thing is how do they leverage that? Okay, well, I think departments that know off the rip, we're not going to be able to be competitive because we just don't have the quote unquote foot traffic that comes to our town or whatever, right? I think they could be competitive by saying, like, look, every year we're just going to fight for enough money to be able to, give you guys some step raises and be able to cover whatever classes you want to take. And guys are like, okay, well, I'm able to have the freedom to go take these conferences, to go to these conferences and take these classes and different stuff like that and bring back things to my department to create the culture. And if you're able to do that, I think no matter how hard it can be sometimes, is I think some people would be more willing to look past the lower side of the pay. So that's one part to my retention aspect. The other part of it is if you have the foot traffic within your area, like our town is, we have a lot of foot traffic. Like we're just outside of where Clemson University is, if anybody knows where Clemson University is. We're the last city before you go into Clemson. And essentially, to get to Clemson, we have a road that runs through our city called Clemson Boulevard, which is Main Street. It runs all the way to Main Street and then becomes Clemson Boulevard. You could run the entire city of Anderson all the way down and just continue to go to Clemson, or you can go 85. So, with that being said, you have now the busiest road in the city. That has a lot of commercial. We have a Target, we have Walmart, we have Sam's, we have tons of restaurants, big franchise restaurants, right? The foot traffic's there. We also have a lot of development coming to our area, housing and different stuff like that. So the foot traffic's there. So that brings into the category argument of like, hey, we can now have different conversations about reimbursement for paycheck wise and salaries and different stuff like that. We have a budget that allows you to be able to go take these classes that you want to go take. But also that also brings the next point is, okay, so you have all that, you have all the fanciness, right? I'll use that word, the fanciness, the good compensation, the ability to go take whatever classes you want, beautiful rigs. We have two frontline engines that just got delivered last year. Beautiful, beautiful Pierce rigs. And so you look at the firehouse, you're like, this is a nice firehouse. It's old school. It's been remodeled. I have two very nice trucks sitting in that bay. I got a brand new battalion car that's a year old that is off the lot for a normal guy like me walking over to the lot is a $70,000 to $75,000 car, right? That's outfitted with all this stuff, new equipment and equipment that we are not opposed to buying to be able to update, right? And it's like, okay, so we have all that. We have those boxes checked. Let's now focus on how do we retain, right? And I think that is the hardest question because you'll see sometimes people leave for family. You'll see sometimes, and I'm not talking about just my organization
Right.
specifically, but it's like you see people leave because of family. You see people leave because of a better job opportunity and this, that, and the third. And that's just always going to happen, right? That's always going to happen. That's life. That's what it is. But I think where, as the fire service, we can get better at retention is, the basic things. Be for those people. Like, care about your people. Invest in your people. Invest in your department also. Like, I'm not saying be a quote unquote like businessman. Like, I only care about the development of this company. Because you can't succeed that way, right? Like, you can't just not care about the people that you stand next to. Care about their personal lives, dude. Like, sometimes people just don't feel like there's always the opportunity to be able to share with those guys that they work next to, like some of the things that are going on. And I say this, I know this might sound like a very standardized answer on retention, but I can't give you this massive in-depth answer because I'm not in the front office, right? I'm giving you the answer as a floor level fireman of stuff that me personally, when I look at somewhere of like a retention aspect of the basic things that we can check a box off of to keep people. Right. And that inevitably also brings, like I said, caring about your people, caring about their personal lives, knowing their family, excuse me, knowing their family. Like, I'm very fortunate. If my wife walks into the firehouse, everybody knows her by name. Right. There's four guys, five guys in our department right now. We're all pregnant. Our wives are all pregnant at the same time. So we're all getting ready to have this massive influx of kids. And even though we are essentially, a smaller, department of three stations, everybody knows everybody. And there's that personability that does make it fun, right? Like, I know the guys' wives' names, I know their kids' names, I know about them, I know about, like, hey, this guy's selling his house. Oh, wow. Why is he selling his house? Well, he just bought another house right up the road, and this is why he's buying it. And this, that, and third. Oh, cool. And when you see that guy, hey, man, I heard you got this going on. Congratulations. Appreciate it. Thank you. Right. To me, that's like stuff that adds into retention because, yes, pay is a big thing, inevitably, with today's society, economy, market, all that pay is massive. But like, there's more to just pay. If I go to my training officer and I'm like, hey, man, I really want to take this class. The answer's not no. The answer's like, hey, let me run it up real quick. The only reason I'm going to run it up is because apparently you're like, yeah, dude, you do have to travel for this class. So we're going to try and figure out, does it make sense to have you take a car? Are we buying you a plane ticket? Whatever we're doing like that, right? And we're very fortunate for that. We're very fortunate for that. And not a lot of places can say that. So I think a lot of it too, though, also with recruitment and retention is getting out into the community. And how's your community PR? And that's big. I heard something the other day that was really deep is like most governments, county or city council governments, what do they want to hear? They want to hear about the things that you're leaving the impact in the community of. But you're really not going to see a lot of those city or council government people at the fires, right? Because that's the bread and butter of what you do. They just naturally, I guess, expect that we're good at that. And it's true. It's true. Like when you have the community that goes to these meetings and they're like, hey, I had the fire department at my house 3 days ago, and those were some of the most professional dudes I've ever met in my life because they cared, they showed that they cared, they did what I asked them to do. And yes, in your head, I'm sure you're like, oh, another smoke detector. But again, it goes back to my point, man. How can you really be for them if you're not willing to do all that? And I think that's where a lot of the recruitment aspect can come because you see these kids that maybe there's a kid getting ready to graduate high school that just doesn't know what he wants to do with his life. And you came and put smoke detectors in his house. And this is totally an example, but like you came and put smoke detectors in his house and he saw how professional you were. And you're just like, you know what? I kind of want to look at being a fireman. There's a domino effect that can be created through that, right? And we as the fire service have become big on PR events and community outreach and different stuff like that, right? Because, even though the fire duty may be low, It still serves its purpose, right? Like we still have to educate the public and all that stuff, right? But that can also create a whirlpool effect and domino effect of also how well we can be at recruitment and retention. So I hope that answered the question. I know, like I said, again, it was kind of a long-winded answer in different bullet points that were brought up, but just from a floor level perspective, that's some of the stuff that I look at, right? I used to be pretty set on the fact that like we should just be hiring guys with experience, but again, right now in the fire service, we don't have a lot of guys with a lot of experience. So how are we gonna just sit there and say like, oh, we're only hiring like maybe one guy a year? That's not fair to us as firemen to benefit our staffing levels by just only hiring one guy. That doesn't benefit us. We benefit our staffing levels by hiring people, giving them an opportunity, but also not being scared to say, man, like, hey, you're not cut out for it and it's okay. And being able to say like, we appreciate your time. We appreciate the opportunity and not essentially creating a revolving door, but having a standard of
Right.
like, if we're gonna have that cesspool of hirings, right? Of just like seven or eight guys that we bring in the door that maybe have some experience and don't have a lot of experience, creating that standard, not only departmental, but also across the board, company and personal. I carry myself to a very, very high standard. I have a higher standard than most of them. I think my guys alongside me realize that I hold myself to. And there's quite often times at night that I go to bed and I really ask myself, did I meet my own standard? And maybe I failed. And if I do, I tell myself, look, we got to be better tomorrow. So yeah, I hope that answered the question.
For
And
sure. Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. Okay. the Carter Mentality podcast. Why was it started? What occurred that triggered that idea, that notion that sparked it to come to fruition?
yeah, man. So about almost 3 years ago, dude, I wanted to give back. I love pouring into people. I love uplifting people. I was never the greatest at going about it because I am very passionate. I am very blunt, and it's a downfall. I always joke with my dad, and I tell him he's the reason I'm this way because he's just also very blunt. But it's all out of love. Like mine and my dad's relationship is just incredible. As a 32-year fire service veteran, he's 55 years old. He still goes to fires. He still operates the fires. And I've always just been up brought up of like, this is do it right the first time. You don't have to go back and do it again. Live by a code, live by a set of ethics and values and morals, and always maintain your character. Don't be so interested in being liked. Be more surrounded around being respected, because at the end of the day, the most efficient and effective leaders in the workforce are people that are respected. And they might not be liked because they're not willing to stand up for what's right when it's right, and not willing to stand up and are willing to also stand up for when it's wrong, it's wrong. Right. And my father always raised me to just not give a shit about the popularity contest, like be that guy that is willing to sometimes take the flack because you have a character value and you have a set of morals. And if that what's happening doesn't align with those morals or those values, you're not scared to say something. And I just felt like giving back to the community about that, right? Because I feel like right now we as a society, not just the fire service, as a society, we're very broken in a lot of those areas. We're very, very broken in a lot of those areas because so many people are glued to their phones. They're not getting that organic nurturement. Excuse me, that was the wrong way to say that. Organic nourishment that is imperative to the development, right? And so I looked at it this way, man. I said, look, if people are going to be glued to their phones, I want to be a percentage of good that's coming across, right? I was always very nervous, and I've always been a very strong believer in Christ. I have a huge faith, and we talked about that on my podcast together. I was always kind of scared to bring it up in the firehouse, and I fell off of that faith for a while in my life. Went through some strong mental health stuff, but always came back to felt the conviction of the Holy Spirit and came back. And so I just wanted to give it back and say like, hey, I want to be a platform that talks about, the realities of life. This is what it means to be a strong man. This is what it means to be a good man. This is what it means to be a good father, a good exemplification of a leader. But I always told myself I didn't want to be just another fire department podcast, right? Because how many times can you sit here and talk about stretching lines and going down a hallway before people just kind of lose interest, right? But it's funny because I was telling the guys the other day when we were talking about it, some of my best episodes have came from being firemen because there's that ability to be able to tie in. It's my old quote that I always say, hey, what I teach you in the firehouse isn't just what I teach you to be a good fireman. It's what I teach you how to be a good man and human being at the end of the day, right? Like the leadership points that I bring up to you can be transitioned over into regular life. I just took with it. And the first episode I ever recorded was in my parents' guest bedroom when I was on vacation. And from there, I've had a lot of learning moments from a lot of amazing guests, but just being able to iron out the works of everything of like how to get better and more fluid with everything. And I'm very blessed to be where it is today. It's a pretty well-known podcast. And the Lord is 100% the reason for that. But I think ultimately at the end of the day is if you look at things and you say like, this is what I want to be, and this is how I want to carry myself, and you're willing to step up no matter the hate that you get from it or the dislike that you get from people for it or the ones that clown you for it or people that have something to say about it, but you know what your character is at the end of the day, there's somebody out there that can benefit from that, right? And that's all I've ever wanted is just to be able to be the person that if there's someone on the other end of that podcast that's listening, that's going through some serious shit mental health wise, like, hey man, I've been there. I get it. I get what you're dealing with. And I'm not saying my way was the only way that got me that fixed it, but maybe this way can help you. Maybe this way can give you a platform under or platform foundation to know like this is where I even start to navigate it, right? Or all the way to just leadership. Like maybe that person feels like they're not being a good leader and they're having to do some sort of reflection. And if there's something in that podcast that people listen to and they're just like, man, that really touched me. Like that touched my heart and really helped me think about some other things in different perspectives. And so I just wanted to give back, man. And so that's really what I wanted to do is just be a platform and show that gives back. And yeah, I'm forever thankful and forever blessed. And I was blessed to have someone like you on and the conversation we had, and was very thankful for that conversation. And just where it's gone to today, I'm for like I said, I can't say it enough. I'm forever thankful for it.
Awesome. Love it. Fantastic. Okay. I always like to ask the guests this last question. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
So it's funny, man. Me and my dad talk about this a lot. I think my dad is eligible for retirement next year, or excuse me, this coming year. And I always ask him. I'm like, he's a division chief, and I ask him all the time. I'm like, are you satisfied? And it's deep. It's deep. He says, what is satisfaction? He said, I get to do one of the best jobs in the world every day. He said, around some amazing people. He said, despite all the headaches, despite all the frustration, despite all the stress that sometimes they can come with being a chief officer, he was like, I get to go to fires. I get to watch people flourish at their jobs. I get to play a role in helping people flourish in their jobs. And it's very, very impactful the way he lays it out, So with that question to ask that you just asked me, I've always said captain. I've always said captain is where I wanted to finish. But I also come back and say, if right now, if the Lord said right now, if something happened and took the ability for me to be away from ever being a fireman again, it would hurt. Like it would hurt because I would miss this job unbeknownst amounts, right? I don't know anything else. Like I wouldn't last 30 seconds in any other job. I got really burnt out 1 year and I stepped away for a month and tried a corporate job and I literally slammed the laptop shut. I was like, I can't do this, dude. I'm out. So I can't see myself doing anything else. But if the Lord took away my ability to do this job right here, right now, something happened, I would be satisfied where I'm at. I'm never satisfied, always wanting more. But I also look back and say, dude, I've had, for me, this is just 100% me, my career. I've had a very amazing career, man. To this point, I'm so thankful to the people that I've gotten to sit alongside on the back step, to the guys I've shared with the fire floor with. Man, I got to share the fire floor with my pops. Like, there's not a lot of people that get to say they got to do that, dude. I've been in some real nasty fires with my dad. I've been in some real nasty fires with some of my best friends in the world. I've gotten to mentor some amazing people that probably hated me because I pushed them really hard. But at the end of the day, just being able to sit down and tell them, like, you, up from my side, you don't understand how good it is to see you, that you're flourishing, and to see the fireman that you've become. And my wife, actually, the other day, my wife asked me, she was like, how long you want to go? And I don't know. I really don't. I always bust chops with the guys and say, once I get my time, I'm gone. But everybody knows I'm full of crap. Because my dad's done 30 years. Like, that's a long ass time in the fire service, dude. So short answer is two sides of the answer. I don't know if we're ever going to be satisfied because we're always going to want one more fire. We're always going to want to cut one more car. We're always going to want to do one more search. We're always going to stretch one more line. But if you walk away today and you're able to look back and say, I did the best I could. I got to go to some incredible fires. I got to be on some incredible operations. And you're able to smile after that and say it's been good. Then I think you know that you're having, not only you're having fun, but that at any moment, you're willing to be okay with knowing that where you're at is where you're going to be.
Okay. I can't refute that. I always like to ask the guest that. That way it kind of gets them thinking because it's far too easy to sometimes think that we will be able to do this job forever. And that's not the case. Like, as you get years on the job, you also get years on your body. You age, you mature, you get older. And there is a point where as much as individuals love this job, like, there comes a point where you have to stop. Like, you have to just turn in your papers, enjoy your retirement. But the biggest thing is, when you get to that point, hopefully the job isn't just your life. Hopefully that's not all you're known for. Hopefully you have a family that's still around, a spouse, wife, girlfriend, kids, things of that nature. So I love your answer. I mean, it's with you being very young, it's also like in a distant future, but man, before you know it, that time moves fast, and you'll be there where your dad is at some point, and you'll be like, where did it go? So I love your answer.
You're 100% right, man. Like, I'm getting ready to hit 30 years old. And, one of the questions I asked him too was, because I look at my dad so much, not only as just a man, but also like what he's done to give back to this job. And it's just such a good example of what you should do to give back. And I asked him, I said, do you want to retire disgruntled or do you want to retire happy? And he like sat there for a couple minutes, man. It was just really quiet. And he said, you can't retire disgruntled. He said, if you really think about it, how can you? And I was like, it's a good point. He goes, like you said, inevitably there's some point where your body is broken down because of how much this job does require of you. But if you prioritize your, not only your fitness, but your personal life, for the longest time, my identity was this job. And this is all I equivalated myself to, was how good of a fireman was I? And I didn't care about what my character looked like on the outside. And because I felt like I had nothing to really live for outside of the job. I wasn't happy in life because I just wanted to do nothing but be in a firehouse. I wanted to do nothing but go to fires. And I was willing to just compromise a lot of my self-driven ambition of wanting to start a family, wanting to get married and different stuff like that, right? And then I met my wonderfully amazing wife, and over the time we've been together, she's just shown me that that my identity is not a fireman. My identity is a husband, Christ follower, leader, provider, soon to be father, and also a fireman. And I'm very fortunate that I take really good care of myself, man. I'm very big on fitness in the fire service, fitness in general, and putting yourself in a position to be able to operate for as long as possible at the tip of the spear. But like you said, man, inevitably at some point in time, you're going to hit that point where, like every operator does, you know when enough's enough. And I hope, because I know, I shouldn't say I hope, I know for a fact that when that time does come, I've looked at the people around me that have retired, and they retired happy. Because again, at the end of the day, even though we're always going to want one more, when you look back at all you've been able to do, like, man, there's guys that find fulfillment in 30-year careers in corporate America. There's guys that find fulfillment in 25, 30-year careers in the military. But speaking about our profession specifically, dude, if you do 30 years of getting ready, of going to fires, 30 years of providing a public service, 30 years of giving back to your community, 30 years of mentoring people, 30 years of being alongside guys that are legitimately your second family. There's physically zero, and this is where my dad just is so spot on when he says this, there's physically no way you can walk away disgruntled. There's no way. And I would love to sit down with somebody that feels like that's otherwise, because I don't personally believe that there's any way that you could. So, yeah, man, it's just it's wild to think, even though it's far away, it's probably going to come, like you said, snap of a finger, blink of an eye, it's there. You know, especially when I have a kid. You know, once my daughter comes into this world, time's going to travel even faster. And yeah, I mean, while I'm beyond thankful and I get to operate every single day and continue to operate and be able to go to fires, and I'm in a position, in a place where we do run a good bit of fire. At some point in time, like you said, your body's going to say enough's enough. And when I do, I'm going to be very thankful that I get to walk away with my head held high.
Okay. Love it. Justin, I want to thank you, appreciate you for coming on, spending time out of your day to do this. I just want to say continue to do what you're doing for the fire service. You are the future generation, obviously. You know, you are inspiring future firefighters to be better. You are trying yourself to be better day in and day out, and that's the whole point, is to try to become a better person every day, just one step at a time, doing something better than the last. For anybody that wants to know, where can they listen to the Carter Mentality podcast?
So the Carter Mentality podcast is on Spotify. Just Spotify is all I put it on, because Spotify inevitably, I believe, is one of the most dominant networks, platform-wise. So it's on Spotify under Carter Mentality podcast. You can also follow me on Instagram at Justin underscore Carter underscore, and that's where you'll not only be able to get a glimpse of not only what my personal life looks like, but also that's where all the stuff for my podcast gets posted. You know, feel free to shoot me a DM if you ever want to talk shop, pick my brain, or if you just need someone to talk to, man, I'm always open to that. You know, I can't speak highly enough about how prioritization of mental health is, but also how sometimes it's just good to have a fresh, nobody, you know, ear to get up that perspective on. So, but yeah, Carter Mentality podcast on Spotify, Justin underscore Carter underscore on, Instagram, Facebook's Justin Carter. And yeah, man, I can't thank you enough for having me on, dude. I'm a nobody in a pool of everybody's. And so I just try to try to maintain myself to the best level of character I could possibly be, and give back to the job that's given me everything, man. I've been, like I said, so fortunate and so blessed. If you took me at 18 years old and laid my career to this mark right now out and said, this is all that you'll be able to do, and this is all the influence that you'll give to people, and these are the hardships you'll go through, these are the upsides you're going to go through, and everything like that, I would have said, there's no chance. And I'm just not only forever blessed that the good Lord has put that, but I'm forever blessed that there's people out there like yourself and other people that not only find what I have to say influential, but are also willing to take the time out of their day to put me on their platforms like yourself to be able to let me share it with the world. So I'm very thankful. I do want to say this. I know whenever we were on my podcast, you were talking about wanting to, you probably starting to phase to the point of getting away from here. You know, you've really, I mean, you're 300 and what, 334 episodes in, something like that. And, but I want to say this again. I know I said it to you on my podcast, but I'm going to say it again, man. I don't think you should stop, dude. What you're doing is big. Like, you are putting people in positions to be able to get on here to talk about something that not only that we love, but to leave an impact and influence to the next generation. And that's what we're all called to do, right? Like, inevitably, at the end of the day, if you're a company officer, which congratulations, I know you just got promoted to one.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. But your job as that company officer is to prepare somebody else for your job one day, right? I think what you're also doing with this podcast is you're giving that young generation and even the older generation and guys that have time and on the job the opportunity to get different perspectives, different insights, different views. And it's huge. So take it for what it's worth, man. Don't give up. Don't like keep going. Keep going. There's more people out there. The fire service is a massive world, and what you're doing is phenomenal. So again, thank you for picking up a small fish in a big sea, man. And I'm forever grateful.
Yes, sir. No, I appreciate that. Appreciate the words, brother. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, man.